Hi, family. My name is Debbie. I'm an addict. And first of all, oh man, I feel so overwhelmed. I said I feel a little bit overwhelmed, you know, but I feel so much love in this room, you know, and I know it's here. And, you know, I know my voice is dragging just a little bit, but I got to let God come in, and y'all going to hear me real well in a minute. You know. And that's the way it works here. You know, I don't have to come up here and make up things and tell y'all a bunch of stories because a lot of people know me in here. So I'm getting ready to undress, and I'm real nervous about it. You know, first of all, I would like to thank the God of my understanding for waking me up this morning and being available. And I'd like to thank this area, CPRC, for allowing me to come in to share my experience, strength, and hope. You know, I always, you know, this was my first convention when I came here 8 years ago. My sponsor that I met and some women that she had in her life took me in, and they held on to me, and they showed me how this thing work. You know, and they say, hold on, and it'll get better, and we're going to love you till you learn to love yourself. You know, and I hold on to that today, you know, and it's a miracle. You know, they say I'm from Rocky Mountain, North Carolina, but I need to let y'all know I'm straight D.C. You know, you know, being here in Narcotics Anonymous, you know, dreams do come true. You know, and if we do some work in our lives, we can do anything. You know, my mom used to always tell me that I have the ability to be anything, do anything, and go anywhere I wanted to go in my life. You know, a little bit about me, how I got here. You know, I was born in North Carolina. And when I was about 12, we moved around a little bit, but finally we wound up in D.C. And, you know, all my life, you know, I wanted to be loved, and I wanted to be accepted, and I wanted to be something better than what I was. I wanted the better family. You know, I wanted the two parents. You know, I ain't want no sisters and brothers. I only had one brother. My sister died, you know, and I held on to that feeling, you know, for a long time because she died at home. You know, and my mother never really explained to us what was going on, but I knew she was sick, you know. So I held on to stuff, you know, because what I'm trying to get to is I had character defects way before I picked up some crack and way before I picked up the alcohol, you know, because alcohol is a drug. And it took me a minute to get here to learn that alcohol is a drug because I thought, you know, when I got here that I could still drink, you know, but I forgot that it was going to take me back to the very thing that I loved, which was crack, you know. So growing up, you know, it was rough, you know, so I gravitated to things that made me feel good, you know, and I was thinking about it this morning, you know, things that make me feel good is a defect. You know, because I like to feel good all the time. You know, so when I was young, they had this show that used to come on, you know, and they had a character in it. Her name was Jan Brady. You know, I like Jan because Jan had long-ass hair. You know, and I wanted this long hair. You know, and I wanted to be liked. You know, and Jan always had this part where she wanted to be liked, but Marsha was liked more, you know. So I was like, shit, you know, Jan, crazy. I don't believe I really want to be Jan, but I want her long hair. So when I grew up, I bought a lot of damn long wigs, you know. And I still do that because when I put a long hair on, I am so different. Trust and believe, you know. Shit, I am the bomb, okay? All those character defects come out. You know, ain't no complete surrender nowhere. Nigga, I look good, okay? You know, trust and believe that. You know, so I get better on good days. You know, but anyway, growing up, you know, trying to be somebody else so that y'all can like me. You know, so we moved to D.C., and when I was growing up, y'all need to know I was a big girl. At 12, I was 18, you know. So I really, really wanted to be liked. So I had to buy some people, and I had to act like I liked their ass when I really didn't. You know, I had to, we went in a rough neighborhood on 7th Street, you know, Shaw Junior High School. And I said, well, shit, I'm new in the block, so I got to find some friends. You know, but what I chose was the baddest people on 7th Street. You know, I saw this girl one day drag this girl down the street, whoop her ass. I said, that's my best friend. You know, daggone it. You know, and we start hanging out on Kennedy Playground and smoking cigarettes, giving shotguns on some cool cigarettes. You know, and that's how my story began. You know, and I ended up, you know, in high school, and I had met this boyfriend because, you know, I had to have a boyfriend, you know. But I ain't know the girl ain't want him because he was real abusive. You know, I didn't know about abusive relationships at that time, but shoot, he was fine. And he had that swagger, and he wore, you know how y'all do in D.C., wear them little pimp-sided hats. He had the swagger, he had the pimp hat, and he had green eyes. Now, he was bad, and I said, I bet he made pretty children. You know. So, you know, so I went on. And, you know, I had a pretty little girl, you know. But I stayed in this abusive relationship that whooped me for 7 years of my early adult life. You know, so I didn't know anything about healthy relationships. I thought I was supposed to be whooped. I thought I was supposed to stay in the room till he got there. You know, because when I left out and he saw me walking down the street, he whooped my ass. So I learned how to stay in a jail early. You know, and I need to tell y'all, I ain't never been in a physical jail locked up, but it's the jail in my mind. You know, and I stayed locked up until I was introduced to this program. You know, and, you know, I need to talk a little bit about the steps. And first of all, let me tell you about my bottom, because, you know, I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous in 1996. And when I came in here, you know, I wasn't doing what y'all did. I ain't eat out of no trash can. I ain't know about no fire barrels. I just was like, you know, I just smoked a little bit of crack during the week, you know. And, you know, I didn't spend my whole check. I still had a job. You know, y'all didn't have a job, but y'all look good. And I was like, well, they doing something, but I'm not like them. I'm different, you know. But I kept using, you know, and needless to say, I kept using. And my story is water, you know, the water in the parks, you know, because when I used and it was all gone, the desperation set in and I wanted to kill myself. But for real, I need to let y'all know I'm a punk. I ain't trying to kill myself. I ain't do no knives. I ain't mess with no guns. And for real, I really ain't want to mess with Haynes Point too much. Because the end of my story, you know, kind of tells me that I really just want to check in the hospital because I was tired as hell. I had nowhere to sleep, you know. So my last day, I was just tired. You know, I was tired, and I know that God was doing for me at that time what I couldn't do for myself. You know, in the moment of clarity setting in, you know, when I left the house I was at, because I've been there for about 2 weeks, the wig had gone, you know. The hair was nappy, you know. I had on somebody else's clothes that was too tight, you know. And I was walking down Georgia Avenue, and all of a sudden the thought came to me, I need to go to Haynes Point. And I need to make a decision to jump in the Potomac River. and kill myself. So anyway, got a cab, and I told him I ain't had no money. He put me out, and you know, I said, I'm going to jump in this water, though. But it took me 2 hours. I had to walk around and find a good side, you know, to jump in on, you know. And, you know, so I went, you know, I went on the side where it was shadow. You know, the boat was there. I jumped in. I said, help me. You know, You know, and then it's so funny when I think about it. You know, I was cute because I still had nails on and I didn't want to hold on to the side. So I was really hauling. You know, vanity, vain, you know, sick, you know, and still thinking that one more time is going to be all right. You know, but little did I know when I got to the, where I told them where to take me to GW Hospital. I just, you know, really need some help. You know, so they took me there, and this particular day, the nurse there, he said, you know, you got everything you need. We ain't letting you in. Go home, 90 meetings, 90 days, call your sponsor. You know, that thing hurt. I said, I'll show his ass, you know. So I did. I went home, and I called my sponsor. But I need to let y'all know that wasn't the end, you know, because I would call my sponsor, you know, it happened again. You know, she said, what happened? I said, it happened. She said, oh, your ass used. You know, like shit. Yeah, I used, you know. But the times kept getting shorter and shorter, you know. And the more I kept coming here, the more I kept hearing something. And that last time, I was tired, y'all. I had got beat down. You know, I had to call my sponsor and tell them, I stole my jewelry. For real, I sold that shit. You know, I sold it in the hallway. Got me some what I needed. You know, but that was the last time. That was in May of 1999, May the 29th. And I haven't found it necessary to pick up any more crack, you know, or drink anything else, mind altering, change my mood. But I did pick up other things to change my mood, you know. And I did come in and I started listening, but I was walking around dressed up for a long time. Matter of fact, 3 years clean and wasn't working on anything, you know. A dressed up garbage can. Because, you know, I had a specialty thing of going to I had to go to the store and get an outfit for the meeting. You know, I had to dress up. Shoot, I got to look good. Ain't working on nothing, you know. But I want to look good. You know, I came in here, I wanted a man. I got one, you know, and somebody else's too, you know, shoot. But it was all right because I could change him because my stuff better than hers, you know. And I'm going to lay it on him, and he ain't going to want her no more. He going to love me. You know, and needless to say, that never happened. You know, I guess she has a mom shit too. I don't know. You know, I don't know. Shoot. So, anyway, you know. So, you know, I'll stay here. So, you know, 3 years down the line, not working on anything in this program, and they talk about when the pain gets great enough, you're going to want to do something different. And what my smarts always used to hit me with was, if nothing changes and nothing changes, like, I wish she stopped saying that bullshit to me. You know, sweetie. Like, oh my God. You know, but 3 years clean. And I was in this house, it really was a hut, you know. I was standing in the middle of this kitchen, and I knew I was dying. The only thing I didn't want to do was use, you know. I had, once again, I didn't want to come in here and get completely honest and tell the truth. So I called my sponsor and said, you know, at the time I had a truck, and you know, I called up and I said, somebody stole my truck. I knew the snatch man got this shit because I ain't pay no bill. You know, I had an eviction notice because I ain't paying no rent. I came in here, I was partying. You know, I was fellowshipping. You know, and I need to let y'all know the fellowship will not keep you clean. You know, the program will, and the spiritual principles of this program. It took me a long time to learn that. You know, and that's what kept taking me back out, because I thought it was fun time. I was the fun girl, you know. But that day, I wanted something different. So I packed up all my stuff. I moved in a room, and I was introduced to Debbie. I was no longer Jan Brady, Deborah, Dee, you know, whoever. Because I was like a chameleon shit. You say it, I do it, you know. I wanted something different, and I went to the steps. And I started working on me, you know. And the first step, I found complete surrender. I had to surrender to my old ideas, my way of thinking, you know, because it always kept me in trouble, you know. And it got me to see here for real, you know. You know, in the second step, you know, the hope for me was y'all was getting an anniversary. You know, let me tell you a little bit about it. My anniversary, my first one, you know, I was so excited, you know, and you know, they say that email thing really works, and it does. So I kept thinking March, 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 and it was May, and everybody kept saying, you ain't gonna celebrate. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna celebrate. So anyway, I celebrated in March. Yeah, and you know, and I thank God for the women in my life and sponsorship. You know, she didn't get out irate. She didn't, you know, she sit there. She looked at me. I was like, why is she looking at me like that though? You know, so she waited till after the meeting. She said, you know, yeah, that's some shit. You know, you ain't supposed to celebrate. I got that email. I was looking through my email, baby. And you sent me an email on May 29th. You said you weren't going to do that shit no more. So, and she said, next year, you celebrate your anniversary when you're supposed to. You know, and you need to go tell people. You need to start getting honest, you know. So, I celebrate my anniversary on the right date. So, you know, but anyway, that's what I wanted. You know, that's what attracted me here was the anniversary. And the hope was, I was looking better. I was like, hey, why can't I get it? You know, why is it that I got to keep on using? You know, why can't I be like her? Why can't I look like her? Why can't I have time like her? Why can't I? You know, I didn't know that it was an inside job, you know. So I didn't have a lot of problems, you know, after I started. I got a God of my understanding because I had one when I came in here. I just put him to the side, you know. But I had to start back believing in that God that he was going to bring me to the other side and trusting in the process, you know. And the fourth step, you know, I really didn't want to talk about, you know, my life and the things that had happened to me because I thought I was exempt. I thought I was the only one that these things happened to, you know, and sharing my life with this woman that didn't know me, that I didn't think, you know, things happen like in normal family, you know, that people ain't touch you that way, you know, and they didn't make you feel less than, you know, and you know, you know, they didn't make you feel like you were the scum of the earth, you know, and that's what my mother made me feel like sometimes, you know, and she made me feel like that, and I always wanted this woman just to say she loved me, you know, and I didn't know she didn't have that ability, you know, and I held it against her all my life, and I fought with her, so I acted out, and I did things that I know I shouldn't have done because I wanted her attention and affection, which I never got. On certain days, she might say, yeah, okay, I love your ass too, you know, but I never got that. And when I shared it with my sponsor, you know, and in the fifth step, I got some freedom when I, let me tell you, I did a first fourth step. I did it like a college paper because at the time, you know, I thought I had this profound writing skill, you know. So it wasn't filled with the truth. It was filled with what I thought she wanted to hear. And when I gave it to her, she said, you need to go back and get honest, sweetie. So, needless to say, I got honest, and when I shared it with her in her backyard, we both sit there, and I felt some freedom finally for the first time in my life, you know. So I'm moving on, you know, and I'm on this, you know, spiritual realm and this spiritual journey, and I'm by myself, and, you know, and I, for the first time in my life, I wasn't in a relationship, and, I said, the next relationship that I get in is going to be heaven, you know. So I'm on this spiritual path, and I met this guy who was already in my life and I was using when I dealt with him. And, you know, but I said, oh, this was one of them bridges I ain't burned. He ain't know who I was. You know, so he came back in my life, and needless to say that we got married, and he was a good guy. And before I got married, I told my sponsor, I said, well, I need to go do some more step work. I need to do my sixth and seventh step. And she said, okay, sweetie. So, you know, and when I got married, I thought that everything had been arrested, you know. And I had surrendered, you know, to my self-centeredness, my jealousy, my envy, my, you know. You know. So, anyway, you know, I knew I was still full of shit, but I played it like nobody else see me. You know how, you know, when we come in here, we skinny and we standing behind the pole, nobody really sees me, you know, but everybody saw me, you know, and they saw who I was, and they told me before I got married, but I was looking at the prize, that big-ass fat diamond ring, you know, because it was fat. I still got one. You know, I ain't give all the jewelry back. I ain't all the way well. So, you know, so anyway, so I'm getting married. I'm going through the motions, and I went to the place where we were supposed to get married, and I knew instantly that it was wrong. But my self-centeredness said, hell no, you doing this thing, you know. And I looked at my girlfriend and I said, I got to leave right now, you know. And she said, where we going? I said, I don't know. But we went to Virginia Beach and I wind up in a convention, you know. But I knew at the time I could not back out because people were coming to see me. And my family were there. And for the first time, they could be proud of me. Because I still haven't accepted Debbie for who she was, you know, and that I still wasn't a bad person like I saw in the fourth step, you know, that I had some good qualities about me, you know, because in the sixth step, and I bought my book because I can't remember everything, you know, in the sixth step, it says what my character defects are. It says our character defects are basic human traits that have been distorted out of proportion by our self-centeredness, causing us enormous pain to us and those around us. So I'm still hurt. And they say hurt people, you know. So I'm still dragging people in my life and fucking them up, you know. All in the name of Debbie need to feel good, you know. So I'm going on through the motions, and the wedding day come, and I want to walk across that daggone thing and get to the altar, and I stop, You know, and at that moment, I could have said, I can't do it. So my girlfriend did like this, and I said, okay, I'm going to have to go through with this. So, you know, so I'm dragging somebody else in my mess once again, you know. And needless to say, it lasted 3 years. I tried to play Betty Crocker. You know, I started cooking biscuits and everything. I became a professional. You know, shoot. They say, go with the flow. I did that. You know, I played Happy Homemaker. I was blowing the phone up with my network. Shit, some of them, they ain't even know my ass. I was calling them anyway because they never went. I'm hurting. You know, I'm hurting, but I'm trying to make it work because I'm in it now. I don't know how to get out. You know, so I stayed in the mess, knowing that I wasn't supposed to be there anyway. Because I want to feel good. I don't want to fucking be by myself. You know, so I'm still dragging stuff. And then they talk about my shortcomings. I don't have none. You know, shoot, I'm be all right. I'm fine. You know, and I kept saying I was fine so much. So one day, one of the ladies said to me, oh, you fine, you fucked up, emotional, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. See, that ain't me, I can't even say this shit right. You know, so, so in a nutshell, you know, I'm still good and crazy, but I'm getting better. And in the seven steps, it talks about the humility. You know what I'm trying to say. I got to tell y'all, I got a new in that grill, you know. And I'm really scared they're going to fall out, right? I'm like, shit. So, you know, so I went got some of that off. So, I'm sorry, y'all. But so anyway, you know, but the humility is not humiliation. You know, I have learned how to laugh at Debbie, and I see when my character defects come up today. I don't have as many, but I know they're still there. Unarrested, I would tear my own self up. You know, and my sponsor simply said to me, you need to work on the ones that's glaring. Because if you don't, they got some more coming behind it, you know, and they vicious. It's just like I got to go back and do what I did in the first and the second step and the third step. You know, surrender, trust, and find some faith. You know, I got to do that constantly. Do I'm going to tear Debbie up, you know, and I don't like to hurt no more. I don't like to hurt people anymore, you know, so I got a divorce. I really wanted to take him for everything that he was worth, you know. But this program had taught me that I don't have to hurt people no more. I ain't God. You know, what's meant for me is going to be for me. And the women in my life have taught me that if he can do it for you, you can do it for yourself. You don't need no man to validate who you are. You know, but I do like one to lay beside me. I ain't going to lie. You know, but the same ring that he bought you, you can go in caves and get it for yourself. You know, you got a job. Your ass just tripping. You don't want to spend your own money. You know? So this program has taught me to become a productive member of society. You know, I show up for work, even though I don't want to. You know, on certain days. You know, But it gets better. You know, y'all said, keep coming back. You know, it works. You know, and in the seventh step, it just simply says to me that it talks about, I looked up the humility, the quality of state of being human, mankind marked by meekness or modesty. And also in the seventh step, it talked to me about patience. And you know, I used to go to church and they said, don't ask for patience. He gonna send you tribulation. I'm like, oh, I don't want that then. You know, so I just take stuff as it come and keep it moving. You know, but today I just gotta tell y'all a little bit where I'm at, and then I'm, you know, shut it down. My sponsor said, be honest and don't talk long. So I'm be honest and I ain't gonna talk too much more longer. But today where I am, you know, they say I'm from Rocky Mountain, North Carolina. 2 years ago, an opportunity came for me to go in business for myself. You know, and it was a good thing at the time, and I thought I had crossed all the I's, dotted all, you know, dotted all, whatever it is. I'm still nervous, you know, but anyway, it was a good thing. And I got there and I did all the necessary, I did the footwork before I got there. And I got there and things started to happen, and it was working out. And then an ordinance got passed on me, so, you know, needless to say that the thing didn't work out. But again, they said it's only arrested. So all the character defects start coming out, the failure. I wasn't good enough. They're gonna laugh at me. You know, I failed. My self-esteem, every time I said the fail word, my self-esteem dropped just a little bit lower. You know, I just one more time has failed Debbie. You know, and I thought everybody was laughing at me, and I didn't want to come back to D.C. and tell y'all it didn't work. You know, I for real didn't want to tell y'all my good federal government job was gone, you know, because I left it because I thought that this was going to work out. You know, it was a good-ass plan. It just wasn't maybe the time. You know, I didn't understand that. You know, my job was gone, so I had to find something. And the one thing that my family said you got the ability to do is find a daggone job. And I did find one, you know, working for the newspaper. But they didn't tell me on certain days I was going to be the carrier girl, you know, with my long hair and my high-heeled shoes, you know, and shucking papers up on somebody's damn house, you know. So, you know, because my brain told me, they gave me a title. I'm single copy manager, motherfucker. You know, I'm mad about that. You know, I still got feelings on it on a daily basis. You know, but I also have some acceptance. You know, I got to do what I do till it gets better. It's a process, Debbie. And then, you know, if I thought life could not get any worse, 2 weeks ago, I was happy about coming to Ocean City, and I said, well, shoot, I ain't going to have nothing to share about. You know, it's so funny. God will give you some stuff. So my little 7-year-old granddaughter decides to write her great-grandmother a note and say, you a bitch. You know, because she was real mad because she had to go to bed and she couldn't watch Hannah Montana. So actually, I thought it was funny because she is a bitch, you know. Like, shit. She told the truth, you know. But I had to say, you know, sweet, you don't do that. I have to spank you, you know. And I don't spank my granddaughter. I don't spank my kids because I lose sight of what I'm doing and I beat the hell out of them. You know, because I have regress anger, you know. Because, like, when my mother used to beat me, she beat me for shit that she was mad with other niggas for. You know, so I got to remember that I had that regress anger, and I will black out. You know, so when I wake up, your ass might be whipped up very well. So anyway, I spanked her, but I spanked her on her hands, because if I did everything else, she was going to, you know, anyway. So I don't know whether this little girl thought in her mind that it was okay to go to school and tell the teacher, my grandma whooped me. I really don't know. But I whooped her, and she had a whip on her arm. So when I picked her up from school, the teacher said, well, Caitlin has a whip on her arm. And I said, yeah, I got to beat her ass. Because, she said, some derogatory things to her grandmother. So I beat her, And she said, well, we don't spank her on the hand. We don't spank them on the arm or hand. We spank them on the butt. I said, well, next time I try to catch it, But, I didn't know I was being set up. And then she said, we don't have your cell phone number on file. I said, I gave it to y'all earlier this year. I don't understand why you don't have it. I said, well, all right, here. Not thinking, going on. So I thought it was over, So the next day, I got a call from the Department of Social Service saying, we need to see you at the school. We're going to meet with you and Kaylin. And immediately, my inadequacies and my self-esteem went to a whole low, And I started remembering when I was leaving my kids and sending them to their dads because I didn't want to be bothered because I was still wanting to get high, that I wasn't a good parent, that I wasn't there. And all that stuff, from the past came right back up to the front. So I got dressed and, as usual, I was flawless because I wasn't going to let them see that I was hurting, I had to dress it up. I had my long hair again, my makeup, my heels and all of that. But I was in pain because I could not believe that I was going through this, in my life at this time because I knew I was a good parent. I thought I was, and I love my kids today. Because I used to say I couldn't stand their ass, and I had them for the wrong reasons. But today I know my kids are a gift from God, And when God gives you something, it ain't a mistake, So I'm sitting in this little room talking to this lady, and I start feeling like, when I'm commercial where you shrink down real, real low, every time she talk, lower and lower, the lower I got, and by the time I left that room, I was in so much pain. The pain had surfaced right back up to the front, and I started feeling again that I was less than. But I had to get some help, so I called some women, and they said, you're a good mother. And they ain't going to do nothing. They just going through the formalities. And I haven't heard back from them. And it's only through the grace. And the one thing, and I'm going to say this and be quiet because I'm getting some notions that I'm going too long here. But the one thing that I know is this program works. And my sponsor always say, I want to be a better person going out than what I came in here as. And I know today that I'm a better person. If you don't see it, I know some women in my life do. Because I know when I came in here, I had whorish behaviors. Some days I still do. I flirt. I used to keep the twins out. My pants were so tight and the thongs were showing. But then I was a big girl. And I thought it was sexy. But it took some women to tell me, Debbie, that shit ain't sexy. You need to take them thongs off your big butt. And buy some bloomers. They got some sexy ones now. So on certain occasions, I do get thongs, but my jeans are big enough. And I put on a belt. And I dress myself up. I don't have to keep the twins out anymore. But when the sun come out, I'm suspect. So for the newcomer, this thing works. Stay on the yellow brick road. The road was already laid when you got here. You ain't got to divert from it. You ain't got to change it. You ain't got to add shit to it. Just keep coming back. It gets better, and it works. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Frank, I'm at it. Our next speaker is Dave from Baltimore.
Wait for all the commotion to settle down here. I'm Dave, I'm an addict. Man, you could have kept right on going. I was all right just sitting there, you know. I will. I'll get to it. You know, this is not one of my most favorite things to do. You know, I really don't like doing this. And, you know, that's my crap. Which one? Which one am I talking? This one? All right, can you hear me now? Yeah. I sound like I'm on a Verizon commercial. Can you hear me now? All right, let me start again. All right, I'm Dave, I'm an addict. And as I was saying, I really don't like doing this. That's my stuff. It's real vulnerable for me to stand up here and talk about myself. You know, I don't like doing that. It's scary, I just don't like doing it. But occasionally I agree to do things like this. If you're new to Narcotics Anonymous, I want to welcome you. The most profound statement we have in here is keep coming back, and that's how it worked for me. When I got here, I was clueless. I came into this fellowship. I had 3 years abstinent from drugs. I got the message through an H&I meeting, and I've been clean ever since. The first 9 steps of this fellowship define who I am spiritually. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about that and, you know, emphasize on the sixth and the seventh step. Going to my first meeting, having 3 years abstinence from drugs, you know, I knew there was more to this than just drug use. You know, inside, I was screwed up. And, you know, I make no mistake about it. I was screwed up coming in here. You know, I was empty. You know, I felt empty. I felt alone. I was full of all kind of feelings and emotions that I didn't know how to identify or didn't know where they were coming from. I didn't know anything. And, you know, I didn't know what to do. I was totally clueless. And, you know, more than anything else, I was afraid because I didn't want to ask anybody for help. You know, I had just done a long stretch. I'm a product of the Maryland prison system. I spent most of my adult life in that system. And, you know, I just didn't know how to cope outside of that arena and being in society without any substance in my body. Am I screwing up again?
No, you got to just talk closer to it.
All right. Here we go again. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
All right. You know, and it was a scary thing for me, you know. I didn't know how to cope in life without being high, you know. I didn't know how to cope in life without having a CO telling me when to eat, you know, when to go to sleep, when to put the light on, when to put the light off. I didn't know how to deal with that. And so it was very difficult for me coming in here in the beginning. You know, I was like this. You know, I didn't want you near me. I pushed people away. And, you know, I did that, and I consciously knew I was pushing people away, but I couldn't help myself. And the other side of that was that I really didn't want you away from me. I wanted you in my life, but I couldn't get out of my own way to let you in. And that's the struggles that I've found throughout my years in this fellowship, you know, in the first step. And, you know, what the first step actually gave me was the ability to make a choice. I never knew that prior to coming here. I never knew I had a choice. My head said, do it, and I did it. You know, it's that simple. And, I learned about powerlessness and, you know, unmanageability, and those things were apparent in my life. I knew that if I stuck a needle in my arm, I knew where I was going. You know, I made no mistake about that. I knew what was going to happen. I wasn't going to another meeting. That was for sure. You know, and that's the thing that scares me today. You know, if I go out, and this is just my way of thinking, I don't know what's going to happen, but if I go out, I'm not walking back in. I'm either going to die or I'm going back to prison. That's been my pattern all my life. But something attracted me to this fellowship, and it was another addict. And why I was attracted to it, because I'd been locked up for a number of years, and this guy come in to do an H&I meeting, and I knew the guy. You know, I used with the guy, and had even been locked up with him before. So that was my attraction. So, you know, what I learned in the first step was is that, you know, I have no power over the way self-centered fear was controlling my life. The blessing in it was I had a choice. You know, having 3 years abstinent walking into this fellowship, I knew it was more to it. You know, and I'm not naive enough to think that just because I'm not using, I'm working the first step. If I'm working the first step, I'm choosing the second. And, you know, and that's the way that I had to look at it. I'm a realist type of guy. You know, I look at it, it is what it is, and I ain't trying to change it. That's simple. You know, and the second step necessitated the need for me to develop a relationship with a power greater than myself. You know, the first step gave me the problem. Second step was giving me a solution. You know, insanity, you know, I knew without a doubt what was going to happen each and every time I did it. I didn't think it was going to be any different. You know, I lied to myself all my life, and I knew each and every time that I acted out or did something unspiritual, I knew what the results were going to be. The third step was simple for me. It was just a commitment to the solution. You know, I didn't get into this debate about whose will it is. You know, what I've learned through the years is his will, my will, whatever, it's my choice. He ain't going to choose it for me. You know, the fourth step for me was about getting honest. And in the beginning, I did not have that capability. The first time I wrote a fourth step, it was just a bunch of crap about how tough I was, how much time I did, how many women I screwed, on and on and on. I did not have the capabilities to be honest. But I did the best that I could. And I kept coming back. And that's what got me to write another fourth step. You know, the scary thing in that for me was, you know, well, first, it took me a number of years to actually get honest, you know, and that was through working with a sponsor and continuing to work steps, you know, and it just took time for it to come. And I probably had 3 years in this fellowship before I started gaining that ability. And the saying is, the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off. And I found that to be very true. You know, it was very, you know, it's funny, it is, but that's exactly what happened because, you know, the most difficult thing I've ever had to do in my life was face the pain of me being me. You know, I didn't want to admit to that. I didn't want to admit to all the crap that was inside of me. I didn't want to admit to some of the things that, you know, I lived in as a child. And I wasn't abused. I was brought up in a good home. I was out there. You know, and I didn't know where it was coming from. And my most consistent thought all my life was, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? You know, there was always something wrong. And I always did things to try to find or put inside of me to fix whatever was wrong, and I didn't even know what was wrong. So, you know, that's my pattern, and that's the beginning of my cycle. I don't debate the fact of whether I was born with the disease or I acquired it along the way or wherever it come from. I'm not worried about that. What I know today is I have it. You know, and it's what I'm doing about that. You know, and it's been it was a struggle for me in the beginning. And so, you know, I wrote a four-step with, you know, eventually through the years I'd gotten another sponsor and I wrote another four-step. And, you know, I was as honest as I could be in it. And, you know, I didn't gain a whole lot of freedom from that. You know, and, you know, what happened was is that for the very first time in my life, somebody actually knew who I was inside. And that was very scary. I felt very raw, very vulnerable, very afraid. But what that did was force me into action. Because, you know, into the sixth step, becoming entirely ready. You know, I was no longer comfortable with doing some of the things that I've been doing in my life. Like intimidation and anger was my way of coping with everyday life. It was my way to control. I just spent 8 years in prison. I weighed 235 pounds, and I was pumped up. And I used that outside in these rooms as much as I used it inside. You know, so that was my way to control. And I was no longer okay with that. You know, that began to create pain. And, you know, the point of the sixth step is for me, is to develop, you know, a lifelong attitude of willingness. That willingness stemmed or was a direct result of the pain that I started receiving from the so-called character defects. You know, I was no longer okay with that. I was no longer okay with lying when I knew I should be telling the truth. I was no longer okay with acting out sexually. You know, I was just no longer okay with a lot of that. Because what it did was, you know, by becoming very raw and vulnerable and having somebody know who I was exactly, I couldn't lie anymore in the rooms. I couldn't portray or live the image that I thought I needed to live to be here. And, you know, now all of a sudden it's like, you know, if I lie in this meeting, somebody's going to tell my sponsor. And I don't know about you, but I know about me, and I don't like it when my sponsor yells at me. You know, I don't like it when my sponsor gets on my ass and tells me I need to be doing this and this and this and this and that. You know, I'm like, I get real defensive. You know, who you think you're talking to, you know, type, you know. And it took me a long time to get out of that mentality. You know, it's like, you know, all the years I've been locked up, it's like, you know, I couldn't walk out of my cell down, you know, and then walk down a tier to the day room and say, hey, look, fellas, I'm feeling a little sad, lonely, and insecure today. How about a hug? You know. And it's, you know, I look back now and it's funny, but there was a lot of days when I felt like it. You just don't do that. You know, and you didn't, you know, and that's the way it was for me, you know. So the sixth step was about me continuing to look at myself. You know, it was like when I had I was taught to work on positives, not negatives. The fourth and the fifth step are positive things. The sixth step was a positive thing. You know, and I was taught that if I was having a problem with dishonesty, I need to work on my honesty. I needed to turn them, you know, and that's what I began to do. And, you know, I had to consciously, you know, make the choices to do this, you know, and it wasn't easy. You know, it's like, you know, I don't like to feel pain, you know, and every time I feel some sort of emotional pain, my thinking is to do something to change that, to change the way that I feel. And one of the things I discovered in the sixth step was that I did not have the ability inside to change what I was feeling. I did not have the ability to express that in a healthy way. Because the whole thing that I've been running from my whole life is the way that I felt about myself. And when they talk about it around here, self-hatred. You know, and my sponsor kept telling me I needed to love myself. And I'd look at him like, man, you done really bumped your fucking head now. You know, Because, you know, that's the way that I've actually felt about myself, you know, in the self-loathing is that, you know, I didn't feel worthy of love. You know, I had no ability to give or receive or any of that, you know, and it's like in the beginning I'd hear the words love and God and all that, and I'm thinking, you know, what am I doing here? You know, and so part of what I'd done in the sixth step was work on, you know, some of the stuff or some of the ways that I could find to express myself in a healthy manner. In other words, if you said something that was out of line to me, I didn't nail you. I would tell you about it. I would confront you about that. And it was very touch and go in the beginning, and it was very argumentative, because when you point something out to somebody else, they generally become defensive too. So they're becoming defensive, I'm becoming defensive, and what do you got? An argument. You know, so there were some trying times in that. You know, and, you know, another juicy one is sex and relationships and lust, you know. You know, I had some problems with it, but I wasn't a big person that acted out in those areas, and occasionally I would do it. And what I found out was is that, you know, I don't like sleeping with women I don't know or I don't like, just, you know, for the sense of trying to gain some gratification to make me feel better about myself. You know, and what began to happen was is that I couldn't get it up anymore. Right. It just wasn't working. And I knew it wasn't working, but I didn't know what else to do. You know, all I'm trying to do, and Debbie talked about it, was, you know, change the way that I feel inside. You know, make me feel better about myself. You know, that emptiness, that hole, that you know, gnawing feeling that, you know, I've had all my life. That's the thing that has driven me, and that's the thing that's driven me to my willingness to want to change. And what my sponsor used to say to me all the time was, is, what kind of man do you want to be? You know, I no longer wanted to be the piece of shit that I was. You know, I wanted to gain some respect. More than anything, I wanted to gain some self-respect. And in gaining self-respect, I regained respect from others. You know, and so that's kind of like how the sixth step went for me. You know, I understood near the end of working through the sixth and the seventh step that, you know, in actual reality, nobody makes me feel anything. That it's self-created. And that stems from the way that I react to any given situation that's going on in my life at that moment. And that's all contingent on my spiritual condition at the time. You know, how well am I in tune with who I am? Where's my level of self-acceptance? Where's my level of trust in this power greater than myself? Because stuff's happening and I don't like it. And when stuff's happening and I don't like it, and it, you know, begins to create feelings inside, the last thing I want to do is trust in a God. You know, because as she was talking about, all this other stuff begins to come into play. And that's where the warfare comes in. You know, am I willing to practice principles over this, you know, thing going on in my head? I mean, you know, just, you stupid motherfucker, you know. It's nuts, you know, but it talks about, you know, perseverance, you know, pushing on despite setbacks, and that's how it's worked for me. You know, there's a few addicts in this room that's known me for a number of years, and, you know, they could probably attest to some of the goofiness or craziness that I've displayed in the rooms. About 30 days of going to meetings just out of prison after 8 years, a guy wouldn't sign my court slip, right? Well, it got signed. I got threw out of the meeting, too. But, you know, I got this, you know, it's just the mentality, you know, that we developed and, you know, we come in here. And, you know, so, you know, I had to be aware of all that in the sixth step. You know, I my reactions and the way that I'm feeling. And, you know, more than anything, it was working on my spiritual condition, my prayer, my meditation, my level of honesty, you know, all those things, talking to people in my network. You know, and the seventh step, what the literature says is that the seventh step is a spiritual choice that goes beyond any emotional reaction or conscious act of will. And, you know, in essence, what that means to me is surrender. In essence, what that means to me is that, you know, I got to give up. You know, and what I found out was is that all the love that God has for me, I already have. You know, I have that. I got nothing else coming in that area. I have it. What I needed to do was practice that. Because it's only through the power of God's love that I change. I found that out. I found out what makes me feel whole, complete. I found out what gives me a level of self-respect, self-esteem, self-worth, and lovability. And that was placing the principles of God's love in my life. And, you know, expressing that to you. And what I'm talking about here is honesty. What I'm talking about is faith, trust, willingness, compassion. What I'm talking about is listening to newcomers. What I'm talking about is picking newcomers up and taking them to meetings. What I'm talking about is showing up for life, being responsible, being accountable for my attitude, my actions, and my behaviors. And when I'm wrong, being able to say, I'm wrong. Humility becomes a result of that. You know, humility is a quality that I just can't say that I have. I can't say that I have joy in my heart today. I can't choose that. It comes and eventually, you know, through the process and through trusting and through expressing, it becomes a condition of my being. You know, and that's, you know, that's what I'm looking for today. That's what makes me feel good about who I am today. You know, and, you know, magical things have happened for me in working the sixth and the seventh step. And I've done this a number of times. I've been clean a few years. And I've worked the steps a number of times. And I've just recently done a fourth and a fifth step as much as a year ago. And, you know, and those are the things that give substance to my life. You know, I feel good about who I am. When I leave here, I'm driving back to Baltimore, and I'm going to my grandson's birthday party. You know, I almost opted not to do this just for that fact. You know, because that's important to me. My grandson's very important to me, you know. And then it kind of got worked out where I was able to do both. So, you know, and, you know, that's, you know, gives me a level of self-worth. You know, I feel good about being able to do that. You know, when I'm sleeping with somebody I don't know or I don't like, I don't feel good. You know, and through the years what I've found out is that the more I do that or the more I act out in any manner, not just that, that's the one just everybody likes that one, you know, it's juicy, you know? What it would do, what I found out was it just made the hole bigger. It made the hole more hungrier. You know, and, you know, I could go a lot of places with that, you know. And, you know, character defects, you know, work in a specific way. And what I've come to understand now is that I got a choice. That my character defects today are a choice. You know, I know better. I've been around long enough to know when I'm doing it, when I ain't. I know when I'm doing the right thing and not. And I don't do the right thing today, you know, just because I think the right thing is going to happen to me. I do the right thing out of my heart because I want to. You know, and, you know, that, I'm about done, you know. In essence, wrapping it up on the seventh step, you know, through placing these principles in my life, what began to happen was is the way that I think began to change. You know, I wasn't a guy that, you know, I when I first worked the sixth and the seventh step the first time, I looked at the defect being my thinking and the shortcoming being my acting out. And then, you know, after a while, you know, I'm thinking it and not doing it, and I'm thinking it and I'm doing it, and I'm saying something's wrong here. And, you know, what I found is that just because I'm thinking it and not doing it, doesn't mean that, you know, God has removed it. The problem still existed. And what I mean by that, it was in the way that I thought, in the way that I perceived life. And I done lost my train of thought. Man, I really lost it. But all right, here we go. I'm back on track. Can you hear me now? See now defects starting to come out, you know. It's a little bit of ego. But what I've learned about my ego is it will kill me.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, in essence, what I'm doing in the sixth and the seventh step is that, you know, it's through the power of God's love that I change. And what I'm trying to change is you know, the self-centered, self-seeking, self-absorbed piece of shit that I was. And what I'm trying to do is bring my true nature up through all the crap that I've acquired in my life. And that's what I'm asking God to do in whatever humble form that I, you know, find necessary. And it's in humbly asking him. You know, and humility has become to me the ability to be true to myself. So the way I look at it today is that I suffer from one character defect, and that's the inability to be true to who I am, myself. Because when I'm not being true to who I am and being honest with myself, I'm living in conflict with myself. I'm living in conflict with my consciousness. And that creates all the crap that goes on, the low self-esteem and the self-hatred and all that. If I can be honest and real about it, I'm able to make rational choices. Whether I like the outcomes or not, it's life, and I need to be responsible for it. And our literature talks about it. It says, through our inability to accept personal responsibility, we were what? Creating our own shit. And, you know, and I'm done. And I want to thank you all for listening and being a good audience.